He kind of started all the plants growing, and he started people. Well, I guess he's kind of big and fat.
He can see us whatever we do. Whatever we do, he has such powerful eyes. He doesn't have millions and thousands and billions. And he can still see us when we're bad.
He could be sitting on the table right now, but you can't see him.
He can't be everywhere at once doing everything for everybody. Everybody can't get what they want.
Welcome to the broadcast today, ladies and gentlemen. It is the 14th of August, 2023. My name is David Stovenel. Welcome to Operation Restore Christian America. My website is genuinechristianitynow.com. My ministry is Genuine Christianity for Today Ministry. The title of today's broadcast is Solomon and the Book of Ecclesiastes, Part 3. Before I get to the reading of Chapter 3 in Ecclesiastes, I want to reiterate one thing about the Gospel of John, which, as you would know from listening to the last broadcast, I first read from Ecclesiastes in the Old Testament, then I go to the Gospel of John in the New Testament. And one of the key verses, and I'm saying this specifically for younger people because this is a very landmark, very key verse in order to understand literally the world you're living in, because the contrast between the Old Testament and the New Testament is the contrast between the force of law and law and the grace and truth. And here's what chapter 1, verse 17 in the Gospel of John. Younger people, please write this down. The Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 17. And here's what the verse says. For the law was given by Moses. Grace and truth came by Jesus Christ. So that, in that one single verse, clarifies the contrast between the Old Testament and the rule of law, and how the curse of the law, the rule of law, was broke up on the rock that is Jesus Christ, and the New Testament is written in his blood. The shedding of the blood of the Savior is why we have a New Testament that supersedes the Old Testament. There should never have been one more law written after the crucifixion. So those that have been lawyers and continued in law making after that point in time are in error. Anyway, let's get to the reading. Ecclesiastes chapter 3. To everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under the heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck up that which is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to get and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to cast away, a time to rend and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time of war and a time of peace. What profit hath he that worketh in that wherewith he laboreth? I have seen the travail which God hath given to the sons of men to be exercised in it. He hath made everything beautiful in his time. Also, he hath set the world in their heart, so that no man can find out the work that God maketh from the beginning to the end. I know that there is no good in them, but for a man to rejoice and to do good in his life. And also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. It is the gift of God. I know that whatsoever God doeth, it shall be forever. Nothing can be put to it, nor anything taken from it. And God doeth it, that men should fear before him. That which hath been is now, and that which is to be hath already been. And God requireth that which is past. And moreover, I saw under the sun the place of judgment, that wickedness was there, and the place of righteousness, that iniquity was there. I said in mine heart, God shall judge the righteous and the wicked. For there is a time there for every purpose and for every work. I said in mine heart concerning the estate of the sons of men, that God might manifest them, and that they might see that they themselves are beasts. For that which befalleth the sons of men befalleth beasts. Even one thing befalleth them. As the one dieth, so dieth the other. Yea, they have all one breath, so that a man hath no preeminence above a beast, for all is vanity. All go unto one place. All are of the dust, and all turn to dust again. Who knoweth the spirit of man that goeth upward, and the spirit of the beast that goeth downward to the earth? Wherefore, I perceive that there is nothing better than that a man should rejoice in his own works, for that is his portion. For who shall bring him to see what shall be after him? That's the end of chapter 3 in Ecclesiastes. The call-in radio show for this radio show is 608-433-9306. Incidentally, that number is located on the front page of my website, genuinechristianitynow.com, for those that are listening by computer and want to write it down or view it there and then dial in. Anyway, moving to the Gospel of John, chapter 3, now, as a contrast from the Old Testament to the New Testament. There was a man of the Pharisees named Nicodemus, a ruler of the Jews. The same came to Jesus by night and said unto him, Rabbi, we know that thou art a teacher come from God, for no man can do these miracles that thou doest, except God be with him. Jesus answered and said unto him, Verily, verily, I say unto thee, except a man be born again, he cannot see the kingdom of God. Nicodemus saith unto him, How can a man be born when he is old? Can he enter the second time into his mother's womb and be born? Jesus answered, Verily, verily, I say unto thee, except a man be born of water and of the Spirit, he cannot enter into the kingdom of God. That which is born of the flesh is flesh, and that which is born of the Spirit is spirit. Marvel not that I said unto thee, ye must be born again. The wind bloweth where it listeth, and thou hearest the sound thereof, but canst not tell whence it cometh and whither it goeth. So is every one that is born of the Spirit. Nicodemus answered and said unto him, How can these things be? Jesus answered and said unto him, Art thou a master of Israel, and knowest not these things? Verily, verily, I say unto thee, we speak that we do know, and testify that we have seen, and ye receive not our witness. If I have told you earthly things, and ye believe not, how shall ye believe if I tell you of heavenly things? And no man hath ascended up to heaven, but he that came down from heaven, even the Son of Man, which is in heaven. And as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so must the Son of Man be lifted up, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have eternal life. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. For God sent not his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. He that believeth on him is not condemned, but he that believeth not is condemned already, because he hath not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of God. And this is the condemnation, that light is come into the world, and men love darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. For every one that doeth evil hateth the light, neither cometh to the light, lest his deeds should be reproved. But he that doeth truth cometh to the light, that his deeds may be made manifest, that they are wrought in God. After these things came Jesus and his disciples into the land of Judea, and there he tarried with them and baptized. And John also was baptizing in Ainon, near to Salim, because there was much water there, and they came and were baptized. For John was not yet cast into prison. Then there arose a question between some of John's disciples and the Jews about purifying. And they came unto John and said unto him, Rabbi, he that was with thee beyond Jordan, to whom thou bearest witness, behold, the same baptizeth, and all men come to him. John answered and said, A man can receive nothing except it be given him from heaven. Ye yourselves bear me witness that I said, I am not the Christ, but that I am sent before him. He that hath the bride is the bridegroom, but the friend of the bridegroom, which standeth and heareth him, rejoiceth greatly because of the bridegroom's voice. This my joy, therefore, is fulfilled. He must increase, but I must decrease. He that cometh from above is above all. He that is of the earth is earthly, and speaketh of the earth. He that cometh from heaven is above all. And what he hath seen and heard, that he testifieth, and no man receiveth his testimony. He that hath received his testimony has set to his seal that God is true. For he whom God has sent speaketh the words of God, for God giveth not the Spirit by measure unto him. The Father loveth the Son, and hath given all things into his hand. He that believeth on the Son hath everlasting life, And he that believeth not the Son shall not see life, but the wrath of God abideth on him. That is the end of chapter 3 in the Gospel of John. And there definitely is a contrast that is clarified a lot just from the reading there from Ecclesiastes 3 and the Gospel of John chapter 3. And the need for all to come to a knowledge of the truth, which in purity is Jesus Christ. The call-in number is 608-433-9306. And I'm interested in talking with anyone that would care to call in about the contrast between the law of Moses and the grace of and truth of Jesus Christ. Incidentally, what Barack Obama said was out, he said, the United States, America, is not any longer a Christian nation. And he was, at that time, and it's disputed whether he was a legitimate president or placed there. That's a separate issue for someone else to litigate. But he made a declaration that America is no longer a Christian nation. And that's outside the purview of the executive department of government. That is an opinion that he declared, that he rendered to the public while he was in the capacity of the President of the United States. So that's a subversive statement that he made, or the uttering of a very confused and deceived individual. You see, there are three departments within legitimate government: the executive, the judicial, and the legislative departments. That's our constitutional order. Now, there are a lot of repugnancies, and repugnancies are like weeds. They're the equivalent of weeds in a garden that have to be pulled out. Anyway, that an opinion is the purview of the court, of the judiciary. So he must have been flattering himself only, because he certainly didn't say anything that was right or true when he made that comment. This was this issue was very carefully considered, and an opinion was rendered within the right and true and correct department, known as the judiciary, the judicial department, in a landmark, if not the most important, Supreme Court landmark case that rendered a unanimous decision that America is a Christian nation. And the importance of that cannot be overstated for this reason. I'll use an example here of two or three different locations that are right now in turmoil: Niger, Ukraine, and Russia. If I were to move to Niger, I would want to prepare before relocating to that nation. I would want to read their constitution, their declarations, primary declarations, and their court decisions regarding what the character of that society is, because the spirit of a nation and the law that frames the spirit of that nation are both equally important if In fact, the spirit is not even more important than the letter. In other words, what does the Constitution say in print, in writing? That is the letter of the law. And the spirit of the law is, let's say, for example, and I don't know much about Niger, quite frankly, except that there is quite a bit of turmoil there now, objecting to French dominance there for so long. And, of course, France was the eldest daughter of the Roman Catholic quasi-Christian organization called what they call the Church. So there is an element of Christianity within Niger without any question, but it's a long time ago that the French colonized Niger. It's a very long time ago. So what changes have taken place, and whether it is a flourishing Christian nation or if it is a decadent place, I don't know much about it. But just as one example, if I was to move there, I would first read their constitution. I would first read their landmark unanimous Supreme Court opinions or decisions. If they have a structure that is similar to ours, that would be the first thing, would be to discover what the structure of their society is in terms of being able to communicate with each other, live near each other, in proximity with each other in the same nation. The same holds true for Russia. The same holds true for Ukraine. If I were to choose of which nation to live in between Russia and Ukraine, as they are being exposed to the world as what their societal emphasis and effort are, I would choose Russia with what I know, but I certainly haven't studied that. I'm not intending to move to Russia or Ukraine or Niger. But someone that has done things in order to be placed in the office of the presidency of Ukraine are definitely not Christian activity. And as a Christian, I would search out which of those societies and which of their constitutions and which set of their sets of laws support and defend the Christian and promote the Christian society, a Christian growth, a growth of Christian knowledge and communication skills, a knowledge of the truth and of grace, because without Christianity, what we get is more laws. And every time a law is made, it ignites more death, because it ignites more conflict in law. Someone searched out not that long ago how many laws had been made in the United States since the Constitution. And the Constitution, quite frankly, is a document that is separate from laws that are made in pursuance thereof. The Constitution is for all of us to study and learn and read from. By all of us, I mean all of us within the United States, within any of the United States, because that's the blueprint for the nation as a whole. Anyway, I have a copy of a syllabus of the Church of the Holy Trinity versus United States sitting on my desk in front of me. And the decision, the overturn of the lower court decision occurred on February 29, 1892. Now, here's what the syllabus contains. The Act of February 16, 1885, quote, to prohibit the importation and migration of foreigners and aliens under contract or agreement to perform labor in the United States, its territories, and the District of Columbia, 23 Stat 322 C-164, does not apply to a contract between an alien residing out of the United States and a religious society incorporated under the laws of a state whereby he engages to remove to the United States and to enter into the service of the society as its rector or minister. So the lower court decided against this hire of a minister, and the prior history of this case is error to the Circuit Court of the United States for the Southern District of New York. Statement of the case. The case is stated in the opinion. And the author of the opinion is Chief Justice David Brewer. It's an important opinion for everyone in America to read, because once again, if you live in America and you have never read this and or are not aware of it, because quite frankly I'm the only one in the alternate media I've ever heard talk about it. Obviously I haven't listened to all of the people in the alternate media. I've never heard a word spoken of it in the mainstream media, and I really doubt that they ever will, but because they're basically on a narrative to eradicate and eliminate this as a result of not being allowed to speak freely as narrators for powerful moneyed organizations that, quite frankly, are under either the influence or the power and control of the apostate King of Great Britain. That's another subject that I might delve into a little bit here. But this case is very important, because what it does, what they did, what the justices did in order to arrive at their opinion, at their conclusion before they rendered their opinion and offered it in writing, was they studied 66 prior cases from the founding of the nation until this decision was rendered. So anyway, here's what Mr. Justice Brewer delivered. Plaintiff in error, and the plaintiff, of course, is the United States. Plaintiff in error is a corporation duly organized and incorporated as a religious society under the laws of the state of New York. E. Walpole Warren was, prior to September 1887, an alien residing in England. In that month, the plaintiff in error made a contract with him by which, I stand corrected. The plaintiff in error, where the error had to be corrected, was the employer for Mr. Walpole. Reading legal language is difficult for me. I apologize for that, but I did correct myself. To remove to the city of New, by which he was to remove to the city of New York and enter into its service as rector and pastor. And in pursuance of such contract, Warren did so remove and enter upon such service. It is claimed by the United States that this contract on the part of the plaintiff in error was forbidden by the Act of February 26, 1885, 23 Stat 332 C-164, and an action was commenced to recover the penalty prescribed by that act. The Circuit Court held that the contract was within the prohibition of the statute and rendered judgment accordingly, 36 Fed Rep 303, and the single question presented for our determination is whether it erred in that conclusion. The first section describes the act forbidden and is in these words: be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled, that from and after the passage of this act, it shall be unlawful for any person, company, partnership, or corporation in any manner whatsoever to prepay the transportation or in any way assist or encourage the importation or migration of any alien or aliens, any foreigner or foreigners into the United States, its territories, or the District of Columbia under contract or agreement, parole or special, express or implied, made previous to the importation or migration of such alien or aliens, foreigner or foreigners, to perform labor or service of any kind in the United States, its territories, or the District of Columbia. That's the end of that statute. Obviously, after the dreadful War of Northern Aggression, also known as the Civil War, there's nothing civil about warfare, there was an effort to prevent any importation of African slaves in particular after that, but slaves in general from anywhere after that. Anyway, his opinion continues now after identifying the statute. It must be conceded that the act of the corporation is within the letter of this section, for the relation of rector to his church is one of service and implies labor on the one side with compensation on the other. Not only are the general words labor and service both used, but also, as it were, to guard against any narrow interpretation and emphasize a breadth of meaning, to them is added of any kind. And further, as noticed by the circuit judge in his opinion, the fifth section, which makes specific exceptions, among them professional actors, artists, lecturers, singers, and domestic servants, strengthens the idea that every other kind of labor and service was intended to be reached by the first section. While there is great force to this reasoning, we cannot think Congress intended to denounce with penalties a transaction like that in the present case. It is a familiar rule that a thing may be within the letter of the statute and yet not within the statute, because not within its spirit nor within the intention of its makers. This has been often asserted, and the reports are full of cases illustrating its application. This is not the substitution of the will of the judge for that of the legislator, for frequently words of general meaning are used in a statute, words broad enough to include an act in question, and yet a consideration of the whole legislation, or of the circumstances surrounding its enactment, or of the absurd results which follow from giving such broad meaning to the words, makes it unreasonable to believe that the legislator intended to include the particular act. As said in Plowden, 205, quote, from which cases it appears that the sages of the law heretofore have construed statutes quite contrary to the letter in some appearance, and those statutes which comprehend all things in the letter they have expounded to extend to but some things, and those which generally prohibit all people from doing such an act they have interpreted to permit some people to do it, and those which include every person in the letter they have adjudged to reach to some persons only, which expositions have always been founded upon the intent of the legislature, which they have collected sometimes by considering the cause and necessity of making the act, sometimes by comparing one part of the act with another, and sometimes by foreign circumstances. In Margate Peer Company versus Hannum, 3B and ALD 270, Abbott C.J. quotes from Lord Coke as follows. Acts of Parliament are to be so construed as no man that is innocent or free from injury or wrong be, by a literal construction, punished or endamaged. End of quote. In the case of the State v. Clark, 5, Dutcher, 29, New Jersey Law, in parenthesis, 96, 98, 99, it appeared that an act had been passed making it a misdemeanor to willfully break down a fence in the possession of another person. Clark was indicted under that statute. The defense was that the act of breaking down the fence, though willful, was in the exercise of a legal right to go upon his own lands. The trial court rejected the testimony offered to sustain the defense, and the Supreme Court held that this ruling was error. In its opinion, the court used this language, quote, the Act of 1885, in terms, makes the willful opening, breaking down, or injuring of any fences belonging to or in the possession of any other person a misdemeanor. In what sense is the term willful used? In common parlance, willful is used in the sense of intentional, as distinguished from accidental or involuntary. Whatever one does intentionally, he does willfully. Is it used in that sense in this act? Did the legislature intend to make the intentional opening of a fence for the purpose of going upon the land of another indictable, if done by permission or for a lawful purpose? We cannot suppose such to have been the actual intent. To adopt such a construction would put a stop to the ordinary business of life. The language of the act, if construed literally, evidently leads to an absurd result. if a literal construction of the words of a statute be absurd, the act must be so construed as to avoid the absurdity. The court must restrain the words. The object designed to be reached by the act must limit and control the literal import of the terms and phrases employed. In United States versus Kirby, 7 Wall, 482-486, the defendants were indicted for the violation of an act of Congress providing, quote, that if any person shall knowingly and willfully obstruct or retard the passage of the mail or of any driver or carrier or of any horse or carriage carrying the same, he shall, upon conviction for every such offense, pay a fine not exceeding $100, end of quote. The specific charge was that the defendants knowingly and willfully retarded the passage of one Ferris, a carrier of the mail, while engaged in the performance of his duty, and also in like manner retarded the steamboat General Buell at that time engaged in carrying the mail. To this indictment, the defendants pleaded specially that Ferris had been indicted for murder by a court of competent authority in Kentucky, that a bench warrant had been issued and placed in the hands of the defendant, Kirby, the sheriff of the county, commanding him to arrest Ferris and bring him before the court to answer to the indictment, and that in obedience to this warrant, he and the other defendants and his posse entered upon the steamboat General Buell and arrested Ferris and used only such force as was necessary to accomplish that arrest. I want to digress at that point. The sheriff and his deputies at that point did not say, get on the ground, get out of the car, get on the ground, and then shoot somebody. They used only such force as was necessary to accomplish that arrest. That would be what would happen. That will be what will happen after we restore our nation to its rightful heritage, that of a genuine Christian nation. And this is an uphill climb, this is climbing a mountain higher than any that's ever been climbed before. Because the propagandists have basically silenced the voices of truth in this nation, except for a few that are at this point what would be called calling out in the wilderness. Understanding the proper procedure and the proper behavior of a sheriff is necessary. Right now in this nation, sheriffs are not doing what they are compelled by law to do, and they are doing that which is lawless, which is killing people. One of my friends, in the middle of June, an unarmed, I'm almost certain it hasn't came to trial yet. It's being investigated. I'm almost certain he was unarmed. I had never seen him with a gun in his hand in my entire life. The only time I ever saw him with a knife in his hand was when he was in his garage where he cleaned fish. They killed him. They just shot him in the head and killed him. So you see that deputy sheriffs they're under the authority of the sheriff, and the sheriff is under the authority of the county board. So this is now what would be called, what the scriptures declare and call, a habitation of devils in this nation, a habitation of devils. And we will either get repentance from sheriffs and their deputies, or the habitation of devils will increase in violence and death and misery and destruction as the result of their rebellion against our right and good laws that are in pursuance of the Constitution, and ignore the laws, statutes, codes, executive orders that are repugnant to the Constitution. The main thing is for more people, for everyone, young and old alike, to study the KJV Bible and to study the Constitution in great detail. For example, for those of you that have been accused of something, read Article 3, Section 2, Clause 2, especially the first three words when you want to defend yourself in court. I thank one and all of you for listening into the broadcast. The spirit of the law is more important than the letter of the law. That's all that police need to know. The spirit of the law is the spirit of the living God, Jesus Christ, his only begotten Son, and God the Father, and Lord Holy Ghost. And I'm interested in knowing if we have a call at this time. All right, ladies and gentlemen, the call number is 608-433-9306. Apparently, there is a little bit of trepidation now by deputies that are on patrol when they stop people, in that some of them are coming back to their senses when people that are operating motor vehicles without error are pulled over, and then deputies will say, roll your window down, and they'll say, I just watched a video of this just yesterday. We'll say, there is no law that says I have to roll my window down. And then the deputy, although he was speaking in very aggressive, very abrasive vocal inflection, and Temple said, show me your driver's license and your proof of insurance, as if he was dictating to him. And the man pressed his driver's license up against the window and his proof of insurance up against the window. So there is some minor sense of reasonableness that is returning with some of the deputy sheriffs that up to this point, over the last, I would say, at least since the 1960s, have turned America into a very quiet, very subtle killing field. Because there are police that enjoy killing people. There's no question about that. They enjoy killing people. And there are those that, unfortunately, are repulsed by the police that enjoy killing people and can't seem to figure out how to execute a proper arrest of the murderer on the spot, not later, but on the spot, or better yet, to prevent the murder by kicking the gun out of the murderer's hand when he's aiming it at an unarmed man or woman or child. That's when we get our nation back, when the good cops defeat the bad cops, the murderers. That's only in the realm of law enforcement out there on the street. And it's a tough situation, because the murder madness has been going on since as I said, it's been going on in an increasing fashion since the early 1960s, early to mid-1960s. If anyone would care to call in and describe what type of a situation they have had in terms of good cops that pull you over and are decent and reasonable, or bad cops that are trying to provoke a reaction to where they can react with violence or force. Call-in number is 608-433-9306. I have had several circumstances in my lifetime where what I would call a bad cop or a brainwashed cop, it might be a brainwashing. I don't know how intense their brainwashing is. I've never been through a police academy. But there have been several times where I acted with propriety and was polite, and where there was provoking language. Well, anyway, we have a phone call caller, so please come up on air and express yourself.
Oh, hi, this is Lark for David.
Well, hello. I'm very pleased that you called in, and if you have been listening on a radio or on a computer, either one, the main topic of conversation today is the contrast between the law of Moses and the grace and truth of Jesus Christ. And have you had incidences, by the way, with any police officers where you felt that there was a provocation that was unnecessary?
Not really, because the way I deal with police officers in the field, in the public domain, is that I regard them as rabid dogs. I don't think that they know of their own mind. Many of these people are recruited for the military. The ones especially that have the thick necks and the shaved heads, you know, appear to be hopped up on steroids. And so I don't think it's prudent, personally, to even deal with them. You know, when I deal with a rabid dog in nature, I only know that I want to keep that dog away from me no matter what.
Well, I couldn't agree with that sentiment anymore. And I try to encourage those that are in that employment to snap out of it and to prevent criminal activity by the most rabid dog, because if the most rabid dog in any one of those jurisdictions within a county or whatever is taken down by other law enforcement officers as being a rabid dog, that would be some progress. But this thing is it's been going on for so long, the public is almost acclimated to it, and I live in shock and alarm about it every day. Maybe it's because I read too many news articles.
The truth of the matter is that with the establishment of the Department of Homeland Security, or the DHS, post 9/11, all law enforcement in this country, whether it be municipal or local, state or federal, is communitarian law enforcement. And of course, your listeners can simply ascertain that for themselves by simply typing in what is communitarian law into their search engines, and perhaps they'll get a general sense and a feeling of what I'm talking about, because communitarian law, of course, balances all other laws to harmonize with what is called European Union law or EU law. And in which case, rights are under threat, any kind of rights, including any claim to a right to privacy or to even a claim of ownership. of property are under threat with this new system.
So would it be right to say that the Hague would be the nerve center of that? I mean, it's when you say European communitarian law, it comes to my mind that the Hague is the place where they have the debating center and all that. And also, I'm curious about, and I'm going to do more studying about this because I'm not familiar with this, something called the London School of Economics and Political Science. That sounds like something that would garble up law into one big knot, too.
Well, and that's the intent of this law, is to just abuse anyone of the notion that they actually have any rights. Because, of course, the intent is to enslave everybody, and especially within a matrix of a digital panopticon. With this technology today, we're all being tracked and traced and surveilled.
Well, with the advent of the internet, I have found out this much, is I've read quite a few articles, and it's that there are people that are more adept at certain areas of use of the computer, and obviously the people that I would have a great amount of suspicion about would be the people that flatter themselves that they're defending our values here in America, being namely the FBI, CIA, and some of the other agencies like that. Would they be described as agents for communitarianism?
Yeah, but it's all in their policies and procedures manuals. Most Americans have never even heard the word communitarian. And so the whole system is designed so that everyone is on a need-to-know basis, because it's really kind of a form of martial rule.
Well, I want to reiterate what you said, Larf. You said that it's easy for anyone to investigate this by just merely word searching communitarian law. Is that right? I mean, is there any additional words that should be added? Or
simply the question. What is communitarian law?
Great. Well, I encourage every listener out there, what is communitarian law? This is something that I have been exploring and looking into, because it sounds, it sounds so nicey-wicey, like somebody's handing you a bouquet of roses when they say the word community, when we have a community center right in this little town I live near. And so, and what can anybody have against community? Well, it might be a cognate of that word, but it's definitely, when the word law comes behind anything, then I'm thinking, well, they're just preparing, as you say, more mad dogs, more rabid dogs.
It's also a cognate of that word, commune.
Yeah, it is. That's true. And that we all,
David,
know.
Thank you very much for letting me weigh in. I really appreciate your broadcast.
Well,
but
I'm looking forward to calling back.
My pleasure. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your show.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, there is a caller that has described something that is worthy of investigation. Obviously, this is for study purposes. Draw your own conclusions. Not all laws that have been constructed are bad laws. There are laws that support and defend the Constitution. And John Adams said, our Constitution was only made for a moral and religious people. He should have said, by a genuine Christian people. So see you Wednesday. Thanks for listening in, ladies and gentlemen.